All right, in 3, 2, 1, we're on the air.
This is the Schnauzer Logic Radio Company.
And this is Schnauzer Logic. It is our show number 62, and it's being recorded on Wednesday. It's March the 12th, 2008.
Groundbreaking, critically acclaimed, smash hits, HBO original series. And now, the HBO original series.
Schnauzer Logic.
What people, sweetheart?
From all over. You think it's really boring.
You're not seriously listening to this, are you?
Yes.
People will come.
Ray. People will come, Ray.
They'll come for reasons they can't even fathom. They'll turn up your driveway, not knowing for sure why they're doing it. They'll arrive at your door, as innocent as children, longing for the past. Of course, we won't mind if you look around, you'll say. It's only $20 per person. They'll pass over the money without even thinking about it. For it is money they have, and peace they like.
And they'll walk out to the bleachers, and sit in shirt sleeves on a perfect afternoon. They'll find they have reserved seats where they sat when they were children and cheered their heroes. And they'll watch the game, and it'll be as if they'd dipped themselves in magic waters. The memories will be so thick, they'll have to brush them away from their faces.
Ray.
People will come, Ray. The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been
Schnauzer Logic.
It's a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good and it could be again. Oh, people will come, Ray. People will most definitely come.
You will lose everything. You will be evicted.
What's that guy talking about? Why does he keep calling me Ray?
Clinton, liberals, dittos!
I'm Dr. Mora, and I'm my poodle's mother.
Today on All Things Considered to Death, Moss.
Yeah, baby, show me your...
Son of Easter, my friends, son of Easter, and welcome! You have managed to tune in, latch on, and otherwise download that stream of bits known around the world as Schnauzer Logic. Yes, this is Schnauzer Logic. It's our 62nd show, and it's being recorded on Wednesday. It's March the 12th, 2008. My name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host. I'm your buddy. I'm your pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning, and I'm thrilled and delighted to welcome each and every one of you back. We're here, baby, and we're getting ready to launch another series of great, great programs. It's not baseball, but it's pretty damn good. We got a pretty great show to kick off sort of 2008 for us today. Here in the United States, obviously, it's all about the politics. Politics has taken the place of... I don't know, pop culture? Politics is pop culture, I guess. We've got, obviously, the presidential race here in the United States, and a lot to talk about there. And we're going to have as our guest today Doug Sovereign. He's an award-winning journalist for CBS News Radio, KCBS, so he's going to be joining us today. Also, the governor of New York has resigned for spending $5,000 on a hoo-ha.
And lots of hoo-has.
Lots of hoo-has. No, $5,000 for 2 hours. $2,500 an hour. And the thing that shocked me most was, as a Jew, he paid for it. And he clearly paid full price.
Oh, yeah.
This is
He's
troubling
not a very
to me.
Good Jew.
This is troubling to me. That voice, of course, you know, is the one, the only, our very, very dear love and friend, Sherry Stevens, Sonavista.
Sonavista.
Welcome to Schnauzer Logic.
Thank you. It is so good to be back.
It's good to have you across the table from me here. We're also going to be talking to Jason Nathanson today. He'll be checking in from Los Angeles, where he is now doing live on the air reports at KNX, the CBS news station. We've got a whole CBS thing going on here
cool.
today. So Jason will be checking in with us. And we're going to touch base with John DeCoven.
Yay.
I don't think we're going to play a game of win John DeCoven's money, although we could tell him we are and then just make shit up.
And the outcome will always be the
Pretty
same.
Pretty much the same, guaranteed. But I want to get caught up with John. He's been pushing his business very, very hard. And I don't know whether you read John's blog, but he is, he's trying to lose weight.
Oh, I haven't read it.
John is a tall, John's a big guy. John is, I don't know, almost 6'6", I think. So John is a, because I'm almost 6'2", and John really towers above me. When he hugs me, he makes me feel petite, if you will. And John had a heart attack when he was 35.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. John had a heart, yeah, yeah. John had some serious medical stuff. And I guess he got into good shape, and he kind of let it go again. And so he was back over 300 pounds. And he decided he wanted to make himself healthy again, and he put up a blog to kind of track all of this stuff, and he did really well for a few weeks, and he kind of fell off the wagon. And I feel like, as someone who's struggled with weight and over the last 2 years has lost about 50 pounds, really slowly but steadily, I wanted to offer him encouragement.
Mm-hmm.
And also a bit of humiliation, but mostly encouragement. But just enough humiliation. So we'll be having that. Plus random stuff and nonsense. And I don't think Sean will be joining us today. I don't think Parviz will be joining us today. But the rest of you guys, you're all here.
We're all here.
How could that be bad?
We're back.
We are back, baby.
When was our last show?
Well, technically it was in August. Although we did do, I guess technically what I should say is I think we did one in November. We did kind of a pre-Thanksgiving show. With you and Parviz,
mm-hmm.
but we'll get around to that. We just my timing's a little off. We'll get back. We got to say hello, of course, to our regulars. Though we got to say hello to Mr. Kip Adada, and we got to say hello to Michael Zwirling.
Stroke or unload.
And Dick Cheney. What happens when he's no longer vice president? I don't know if I can.
It's time to change the sound.
Sorry, Harry and, and Kenneth.
Home networking.
Sammy.
Amos, motherfucker, do you speak it?
And Allie. Jerry.
Stop laughing. It's not funny.
And
when is a good fairy going to take off my penis?
And of course,
I'm Brian Cox.
There you go. Did you like the opening, the little Field of Schnauzers?
I love that. Appropriate during the season of
baseball. The Giants are already in last place, and the season hasn't
they even
haven't
started.
Woo!
That's
oh,
our team.
I am so excited. Well, so I got season tickets.
I know. I'm
I bought into
to
season
that.
Tickets this year. It's going to be a very exciting year. Barry Bonds is not on the Giants this year. He, in fact, he's not playing anywhere at this point. And my theory is, as long as the indictment is hanging over his head, no team will sign him.
He's too busy giving depositions.
I don't think he's giving any depositions now. I think he's just waiting for his trial to start, right? But I told you this is sort of weird. I mean, we're kind of getting off on this foot, but that's all right. We can do that. I can push buttons. I can make things happen here. We'll talk about stuff. TheSmokingGun.com,
mm-hmm.
the repository for kind of official papers, documents, and things of that nature. The moment that the grand jury testimony of Barry Bonds was unsealed, it showed up on The Smoking Gun. It was 153 pages as a PDF of a typed transcript from the court stenographer. And that was on a Friday night. And that Friday night, I actually turned off the television, and I sat down with a sandwich, and I read it from cover to cover. Because I am...
Riveting testimony.
I'm a nerd lawyer from the word go to the word stop. I couldn't stop myself. And you know, generally speaking, transcripts are kind of, they're dry. I mean, they're boring because most of it's full of uhs and hums and things of that nature. But if you read enough of them, you begin to get, and if you spend time in a courtroom, you get a flavor for what actually transpired. So you can kind of see the people. And of course, we all know what Barry Bonds looks like. And, you know, for any lawyer, you just kind of put in, I put Sam Worthington. He's my generic, yeah. You know, he's the generic prosecutor that works. And it was clear to me that Bonds will probably not be found guilty of perjury, because I think he has convinced himself, delusional or not, that he didn't know that he was being injected or otherwise given steroids. Mm-hmm. His answers are so consistent. He created this entire thing in his mind that I think that he could pass a lie detector test. Because what he basically said was, the short of it was, I'm a superstar. People try to help me. It makes them feel good to think that they're helping a superstar. Who am I to say no to them? I was in pain. I'm old. My knees hurt. My hip hurts. My shoulder hurts. They're trying to give me things to ease the pain. If they want to try to help, I'm not going to stop them from trying to help. But none of it did shit. And he basically said that in one form or another, again and again and again and again. And the prosecutor said, well, if that's true, can you explain why they were testing your blood level, for example, for testosterone, serum testosterone levels? And he said, I'm no fucking doctor. I have no idea why they do the things that they do. They want piss, I'll give them piss. They want blood, let them take blood. That's what I do. And I thought it was very, very telling. I shared this with you because at one point they said, well, you know, when was the last time you played baseball? Because they were trying to show that he was no longer employed. And he said, and I'm sure that it must have made the room go cold. He goes, the last time I played baseball was in college. I work for a living. And I thought, that's it. Yep. That's it for him. This is a job and this is a business and whatever it takes for him to get forward. And to get ahead in his profession. And I think they may get him ultimately on tax evasion and that kind of nonsense, but I don't think they're going to be able to make a perjury Mm-mm. charge stick against this guy.
It doesn't sound like it.
I don't think so. And so if he gets off, will somebody hire him?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, what they say, America is full of second acts, right? The story of America is the story of second acts. Well, we'll talk about Elliot Spitzer today, find out whether he gets a second act. $5,000 for 2 hours.
Amazing.
Unbelievable. $2,500. I don't make that much.
Me neither.
Yeah, but
we don't make it combined.
That's true.
And that's, you have true. Great legs.
And but no snap and gyro. But I want to get into it a little bit today. Obviously, we'll talk about it with Jason and probably talk about it with Doug. I really want to talk with Doug about presidential politics because he's been on the campaign trail.
Yeah.
Are you keeping up with all of this stuff?
I have to say a little. I'm already jaded.
Are you?
I am. I'm just...
In what way?
Well, we can talk about it a little bit more when Doug calls in, but I'm just already jaded. You know, there's just so much going on with Obama being this, you know, bright and shiny star. Which sounds great, but we all know that Hillary's the badass workhorse, and so it's, you know, there's this conflict in my mind of who should be the leader.
Okay.
And then there's, at the end of the day, I'm concerned that
the music was playing, by the way, in the background, okay. And I just pushed the button that I shouldn't have, and now it's sort of stopped, but it'll pick up
anyway,
again.
Anyway, let's talk about
it. No, we need to keep going, because I need to wait for this to open. I don't have any songs here, so.
Oh, okay. We have to always have music in the background?
Yeah, we need to have, that's how we come out of the segments.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
See, it's been so long, I've just forgotten.
Apparently.
Yes.
Apparently. It'll open here. I got a new flash drive to try to be able to put more music on here and more sound stuff, and we have lots of sounds today, which is really kind of cool, but.
We had no joke.
Well, we had the whole big opening.
That was the joke.
Yeah, we had the cold open. Okay, well, the joke was me doing James
right.
Earl.
I like that. That was your logic. Funny.
Thank you very much. But the whole idea of Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
Is, oh, God. This is really... okay, I got an 8 gigabyte flash drive, and it's running on an iBook, and it's just, it's having a lot of trouble. It's more horsepower than it really has the ability to do, and it's just like loading song by song by song. But I've got a lot of good music today, so I've got lots of good tunage, so it'll be worthwhile. So you were saying that... So does Kick-Ass triumph all? Does it top all? Does it trump all?
No, and I think that it's just in terms of having somebody that knows how things work in Washington, and Hillary seems to have, you know,
someone who's basically had all the hope beaten out of her,
right,
by her husband.
Yeah,
I see.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's another topic.
I see. Does that mean Mrs. Spitzer can run for president next year?
I think she's probably well qualified for it. No.
All right. I do want to talk about this. I think it raises a lot of interesting questions. Obviously, Geraldine Ferraro. You know about this?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have any audio of that. I was going to actually find Michael Richards using the N-word and play that as audio. But, you know, it's become so racially charged that I figured it's not worthwhile. But I do have what she wrote. I actually have the column from the Daily Breeze in the Southern California paper. So, and there is sort of the rise of the old angry white woman. I think that's a segment of politics we hadn't really considered before.
Right.
But they're out there. And the fact that you don't feel that way means you're not there yet.
Oh, good. Because I'm not.
Something
not for
consider.
A couple months anyway.
I hear you. All right. We'll talk about that. That's right. And other and sundry stuff. All right. So here's what we're going to do. We'll take our very first break. You play a tunage and come back. Talk a little bit more. And you're listening to Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein and Sherry Stevens and the rest of our cast, all inviting you to please stick around.
I want to know why you like to dress up like a girl sometimes.
This is Schnauzer Logic. Ba-ba-da-da, 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 ba-ba-da-da.
Take a look at my girlfriend. She's the only one I got. Not much of a girlfriend. I never seem to get lost.
It's been some time since we last spoke. This is gonna sound like a bad joke, but mama, I fell in love again. It's safe to say I have a new girlfriend. And I know it sounds so old, but Cupid got me in a chokehold. And I'm afraid I might give in. Towels on the mat, my white flag is waving. I mean, she even cooks me pancakes and Alka-Seltzer when my tummy aches. If that ain't love, then I don't know what love is. We even got a secret handshake and she loves the music that my band makes. I know I'm young, but if I had to choose her or the sun, I'd be one night total son of a gun. Since we talked last, and I'm trying hard not to talk fast, but dad, I'm finally thinking I may have found the one type of girl that'll make you way proud of your son. And I know you heard the last song about the girls that didn't last long, but I promise this is on a whole new plane. I can tell by the way she says my name. I love it when she calls my phone. She even got her very own ringtone. If that ain't love, then I don't know what love is. It's gonna be a long drive home, but I know as soon as I arrive home, and I open the door, take off my coat and throw my bag on the floor, she'll be back into my arms once more for sure. Like she's the only one I got.
got a smile that'll make the most see. Now annoying old man bite his tongue.
I'm not done.
She's got eyes comparable to sunrise, and it doesn't stop there.
Man, I swear.
She's got porcelain skin, of course she's a 10. And now she's even got her own song.
We're moving on.
She's got the cutest laugh I ever heard. And we can be on the phone for 3 hours.
I'm not singing one word.
And I would still cherish every moment. And when I start to build my future, she's the main component. Call it dog, call it love, call it love, or whatever you call it. But
everywhere I go, I keep a picture in my wallet like,
take a look at my girlfriend. She's the only one I got. Not much of a girlfriend. I never seem to get a lot.
We feel that in every way, this new radio series offers an unusual opportunity to combine broad popular appeal with truly distinguished radio treatment.
Oh, and this one time, at band camp, I stuck a flute in my pussy.
Crystal!
Hello?
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're 20 minutes into this 62nd episode of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, host, buddy, and pal, www.schnauzerlogic.com, Robin at schnauzerlogic.com. We're also over on youtube.com/schnauzerlogic. And if you're interested, you can also head over to youtube.com/JanKaren. I've been putting up Jan's videos onto a YouTube, so you can see Jan on the Late Night with David Letterman. You can see Jan when she was on Dr. Katz, Professional Therapist, the animated show on Comedy Central. Jan did a short film back in the day, an award-winning little short film that I've now put up called Under the Big Moomoo that has a cameo in it from Sarah Silverman. Before Sarah Silverman was anyone. There's actually a lot of people who have cameos in it before they were kind of really, you know, much bigger than they are now. But this is clearly one of Sarah Silverman's earliest works. And so when I was tagging it on YouTube, I put in Sarah Silverman. And of course, now it's getting picked up by all these Sarah Silverman search engines, which I figure is some kind of justice because Jan always says, you know, Jan's always like, she doesn't understand why Sarah Silverman sort of managed to that kind of that leapfrog, you know, basically by having a potty mouth.
Yes.
And it's like, well, really? I mean, how far does that go kind of thing? So let's see, Schnauzer Logic, YouTube, or on MySpace. I'm on Facebook. I don't know. I guess if you want to be on Facebook, you can send me an email and I'll tell you to get on Facebook and we can share Facebook stuff. Are you using Facebook?
I'm not using it, but I've been on it for a while.
Yeah.
Just because I got invited, you know, that's how things start.
More people I know are using, people seem to have abandoned. MySpace it's been abandoned.
For a certain age group. My daughter still uses MySpace.
Yes.
But, yeah, I think that most adults, although now she's legally an adult.
Technically.
But I think, yeah, technically.
Yes. Paging Governor Spitzer. Ew. Ooh.
Oh, no.
Ooh. Ooh. That's icky.
I'm Brian Cox.
Exactly. Sorry. I need to, this is probably more accurate.
Stroke or unload.
All right. There you go.
Apparently it took him a long time because he needed 2 hours.
2 hours. And the notes, the woman made notes. She was, I guess, preparing her invoice. She had to write up a listing of, he asked for things which were considered unsafe. So he asked for unsafe sex. I don't know, no seatbelt? What would be considered unsafe?
No condom.
I guess. But I mean, I would assume that would be something that she would say, That's not even on the table. Maybe doing it on the table. Three legs. He's a heavy guy. Maybe that was unsafe.
That was it.
It was unstable.
Danish modern furniture never holds up.
It'll never hold up. Exactly. Gives a whole new meaning to the word IKEA. There was no joke. None whatsoever. Sorry. I apologize. Something's buzzing. Are you buzzing? Okay, fine.
I'm buzzing, but I'm not.
So we have been off. So the last show we did was in August 1st, which was right. That was sort of the last regularly scheduled show that we did. Was back in August. We then took a break because I had my 50th birthday party. We then tried to rally up again, but weren't able to kind of do so. We threw one show in November.
I think right before Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. you were able to show up. Parviz was able to come. Sean was missing in action for that show. And we kind of stumbled through that show. I felt pressure to do that show. I think I did it because everybody was saying, I really want to do a show. So we kind of did the show. And then we've done no show. So I should take a moment and explain why we didn't do a show. Because I think it's helpful. I realize frequently that I have, for whatever reason, the need to perform and tell stories about my life in a public forum. That's important to me. That's part of what I'm all about. And the fact that I haven't been doing it for a while, I think, is also an important story. And the reality is that I think, like anyone else, you know, life has its ups and downs. And for me, the ups tend to be pretty high, although they're not as high as they used to be. I think I actually realize now that I probably had periods of mania in my life. I think I probably was mildly bipolar for a period of time, and may still be. But I mean, the ups were really very, very high, and the downs were correspondingly down. And I actually remember talking to a therapist about it at one point and saying to her, you know, this seems to happen on a fairly regular basis. Like, I bet I could almost plot to you that if I do this for long enough, I'm going to have another down period. Why she never said to me, really, you're having rhythmic ups and downs? That's kind of a very classical symptom of someone who's suffering from bipolar disorder. But there was none of that. She didn't pick up on that. Or maybe it was too scary a diagnosis to make, right? That it sounds kind of scary. And at least in my case, I think meditation and kind of Zen Buddhist practice has been very helpful for me. But the bottom line is, probably since my birthday until just about a week and a half ago, my life has been out of balance. Seriously out of balance. My health is taken, and I don't think my health was out of balance, but my health wound up suffering because of that. I still have major insomnia. I don't sleep more than about an hour or so a night. Massive, massive anxiety attacks right before I go to bed every night. And so the reason I think I'm sharing this because I understand that this is part of my life and I don't get stuck on it. So the reason that I'm sharing it is because I'm guessing other people go through, probably not the same extent, but that people go through this kind of stuff. I mean, John mentioned that he had hit this kind of wall and, you know, he was having a difficult time. And one of the things that I've learned through my own philosophical practices is that that's the nature of life, right? That there's ups and then there are downs. And sometimes the ups are not as high as you'd like them to be. And sometimes the downs last longer than you'd like. But what I realized for me is I don't try to force myself out of them. I don't try to distract myself from them. I don't pretend that they're not existing. I just take great comfort in the fact that in my life of 50 years, so far, the down periods have never lasted forever. Mm-hmm. They always end eventually. And I used to worry that they would never end, but now I have enough experience with them ending that I realize they will eventually end. All you have to do is be patient. And while you're going through the down periods, just take care of yourself. So this kind of koi in a skatsi, the Hopi Indian word for life out of balance, and I highly recommend the film if anyone hasn't seen it, was how I felt things were going. They were out of work personally, out of work professionally, out of work health-wise. When I was going through this, the studio, you couldn't get into the room. It was just packed full of crap. You can't tell that today, obviously. It looks great.
Clean, and organized.
It's clean and it's organized, and I've gotten rid of most of the clutter, right? I mean, the bookshelves are full of books, but basically I've gotten rid of most of the clutter at this point so that there's actually flat spaces to do work on. And in the process of going through the pile of papers that were next to the printer, and that pile must have been probably two reams of paper thick. And I just, you know, every time I took something out of the printer that I couldn't use, I just put it in that pile of paper. I found pieces of paper from 2005. And it's now 2008. So that was 3 years ago. And I began to think to myself, how the fuck could I get to a place where I had lost 3 years of my life? Because that was, you know, that was sort of my initial thought. And I began to feel shitty about it. I thought, well, I've lost 3 years. How the hell did that happen? And then I realized, well, that's because in 2005, I was diagnosed with kidney cancer.
Right.
And then in 2006, as I was recovering from kidney cancer, I discovered that I had a 6.5-centimeter brain tumor. And then in 2007, as I was kind of recovering from the surgery for the brain tumor and still recovering from the kidney cancer stuff, and they were finding things and stuff in my bladder that I had to go, you know, in the out entrance to take looks with cameras and stuff. I mean, stuff that you just, you know, you'd rather not do, certainly. They discovered that I had another brain tumor that they needed to, at this point, zap with a gamma knife. And the idea was, people know. I mean, it's photographs. It was supposed to be a non-issue, non-invasive, no big deal. And it actually has continued to this day to give me side effects. I don't have complete control over the right side of my body, in particular my right leg. And when I go through these periods of being really tired, where I'm not able to focus and I can't sleep, it acts up. So I wind up hitting myself and bumping into things because my sense of where my body is in space is all fucked up. So that's probably more or less permanent to some degree. And so I looked at this pile of paper and I thought about the last, you know, what had happened since 2005. And all I could think was, I'm surprised this pile of paper isn't twice as big.
Yes.
I'm surprised that there isn't more stuff. You know, I'm surprised that it only took me like 2.5 days to clean this room up and not 2.5 weeks to clean this room up. So I think the point is that, at least for me, I know that there will be these periods of ups and downs. For the most part, I think I'm fairly stable. And I still managed to find time to get together with you over the last few months. And I went to Las Vegas over Christmas. You can see a photograph with me and
Rita Rudner,
right? I got that nice photograph of Rita Rudner and saw, you know, met up with my sister and stuff like that. It kind of took all of my energy to be able to rally, to be present for my nephew and my sister and my family and for the work things. Just whatever energy I had, like, it went into that, and then I would crash. And I didn't have the energy left to do this, which takes a tremendous amount of energy. So,
and creative energy. It's not just plowing through.
I mean,
it takes...
So to do the little opening today, which is crappy and silly and runs for like 2 minutes, right, was a matter of finding it and editing it and then figuring out where to cut it because it runs much longer, and then how much baseball do I get rid of, and then what, you know, he keeps calling me Ray, you know. And
so, what am I going to do about that?
Yeah, exactly. And so, exactly. And I tend to be a perfectionist about this stuff. It matters to me that it all sound good and clear, and I've got other audio for the show today. So somebody, I got a lot of emails, and I just want to thank everyone who sends emails. It means a lot to me. It means a lot to Sherry. It means a lot to Parviz. It means a lot to Sean and Jason and John DeCoven and Ken Turetsky and all of the folks who are part of the show on a regular basis. Really, do we thank you for the listenership and the pressure to do a show again. It's nice to know people are out there and they're waiting to hear the show again. And so it wasn't that we didn't want to do it. It was just that I didn't feel that I had what it would take to do it. And some people had said to me in emails, they had said, well, you know, just do like a half an hour. And the reality is that the 2 hours that we sit in the studio is the easiest part of the show, and actually the least amount of time that the whole thing takes. So we'll do as much as we can any particular day, but, you know, doing an hour show wouldn't reduce the work by anything more than about 10%, perhaps. It's a little less time in the editing because it takes a little less time to go through the raw audio. But anyhow, so I did want to say thank you to everyone. And thank you for coming on short notice.
Of course. I still have it blocked on my calendar. Every week I take it off.
There you go.
When we're not having it, but it's still there forever.
Well,
so
I expect we're going to do this on a regular basis now. Parviz said he'll be back again next week. Other people want to do it. We've got lots of great guests that are lined up in the future, comedians and authors and musicians, and it should be a great time. So here's what we're going to do. We're taking another break at this point, play some more tunage, come back on the other side, and hopefully we'll be talking to Doug Sovereign. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
All right. Thank you for letting me unload on the audience, much like Governor Spitzer.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. Stick around. Hey, we're out of practice, all right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Stick around for more Schnauzer Logic.
Slow down, you got to slow down and take it easy. Slow down, you got to slow down and take it easy. Oh yeah. Well, you've been racing around and your blood's flowing fast and your heart starts to pound. Yeah, you've been shaking the trees, but no answers fall out, just birds' nests and leaves. You told that son of a bitch to get out of this place, so you're punching his face. You threw the telephone down when the bad news came and then it stuck around. You got to make it stop. Find a way to make that pressure drop. So slow
times in your life when the roof falls in and the bed bugs bite. Those sweet dreams you heard about where you slept right through them, what's that about? Cause of that snake in the grass, well you never had such a pain in the ass. Yeah, you tried speaking your mind, but they got you convinced that it's empty inside. You got to make it stop. Find a way to make that pressure drop. So slow down. You got to slow down and take it easy. Slow down. You got to slow down and take it easy. Oh yeah.
Flushing the toilet while your spouse is in the shower.
Oh, sorry.
Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're 40 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, www.schnauzerlogic.com, saying welcome back. And Son of Vista to Sherry Stevens.
Son of Vista.
A little Real Big Fish there.
I like that.
From their new album.
Cool.
Yeah, a little ska.
I like ska.
Yeah, I like them too. A little dirty, a little ska.
Yeah.
One that was a little dirtier, but I figured first show back, we should probably keep it clean here. So
next week.
Next week, when Parvis is here.
Yeah. We can get down and dirty then.
There you go. So I'm very, very excited. I realize that for me, I'm a huge political junkie. Every night I watch pretty much the entire MSNBC lineup. That's here in the United States. It's one of the cable channels that does news talk and politics. The Chris Matthews, the Tucker Carlson, the Keith Olbermann, the Dan Abrams. I actually know their name. I tune over to see what O'Reilly's talking about and Hannity and Combs on the Fox. I go over to see what's happening with the Wolf and the Blitzer and the CNN and the Anderson and the Cooper and the whole thing. And then and like when it's over for the evening, because we're here in California, it's 3 hours earlier. So around 9 o'clock here, midnight there, people are like, they're done. I was like, I need more. I'm watching like taped stuff from earlier in the evening. It's like I'm such a junkie. I know how it turns out. I still watch it anyhow. So I'm thrilled to have as our guest here Doug Sovereign. Doug is an award-winning journalist for KCBS News Radio in San Francisco. He is an award-winning bass player for the Eyewitness Blues Band. He's writing a blog over at sovereignnation.blogspot.com where he's basically covering the this year's presidential campaign. And on our lines with us right now is Doug Sovereign. Welcome to Schnauzer Logic.
Hey, I'm Blitzer on Spitzer.
Here's how big a politics sort of junkie I am. I watch MSNBC on Saturday afternoons, right? And I caught Doug on the campaign trail when he was with Governor Romney. I caught a little bit of B-roll of Doug turning down a donut, I guess.
Having donuts. Yeah, I didn't have one. That was great. I wouldn't have seen that if not for you, Robin. So I really appreciated you forwarding that out to everyone, and it's on YouTube. And yeah, that was in, where was it? That was in Las Vegas or outside Las Vegas, Nevada,
a
caucus that Romney won. You know, it was one of his last hurrahs, and maybe he needed to hand out more donuts in more states. I don't know.
Well, he may get the opportunity. So you were traveling with the campaign, and I'm sort of interested in the process of what it's like to cover the campaign and your experience. Now, at this point in time, are you sort of, I know you're covering everything for KCBS, but are you tracking one candidate over the other? Are you traveling with any of the campaigns?
No, it's an equal opportunity situation. So we cover anyone who comes to town, and then if there's a specific state where something's happening, I'll go and cover everyone who's there. But I haven't yet on this campaign traveled with a specific candidate and just followed them around, because the logistics of that are a little difficult, and you get kind of locked in place with that one person. And if I'm with Obama, then how can I cover Hillary and vice versa? So I've been to Nevada. I was in Hawaii for fun and did a little work there. I've been all up and down California. I'm actually going to be going to Kenya, it looks like, this summer. So I'll do a story about Obama and what the Kenyans think of him. And, of course, be going to the Democratic Convention in Denver and the Republican Convention in Minneapolis and who knows where else. And I look forward to riding the Straight Talk Express with John McCain. So there will be opportunities later in the year when I'll spend time actually with one candidate for the day or a couple of days. But at the moment, it's more of a scattershot approach.
And as a journalist, is this a good campaign season? Is this a bad campaign season?
This is a great one. Are you kidding me? No, this is as good as they get. I mean, it's interesting. Apart from how interesting it is to me, because it always is interesting to me and to you and people like us, it's interesting to everyone else, which is great. That makes it rewarding. People actually come up and talk to you about it. People call you and ask you about it. People are fascinated, and they read the blog, and they tune in. And this is the most engaged and aware I've ever seen the American electorate. So that makes it more rewarding and more fun. But you can't get much more interesting than this. I mean, just when we have a lull in the presidential race for a couple weeks, we get the Elliot Spitzer scandal. I mean, what perfect timing. How thoughtful of him to arrange it that way. And, you know, that's not having too big an impact on the presidential race, but it certainly has left people astounded. So I think this has been a fascinating campaign. And also, I mean, so many things have confounded expectations, and there's been all these ups and downs, and everyone was sure Hillary would be the nominee, and now it looks like she won't be, although maybe she could still be. And the Republican race was supposed to be completely up in the air, and McCain locks it up early, and I just think it's been one of the most interesting in history.
Now, does it teach us anything about us as Americans, or is it simply an interesting snapshot of... Well, there you go.
Oops.
I guess I got my answer. All right. why don't you tell us what Doug was going to say? I'll try to call him right back.
I have no idea what Doug... It's just very interesting, and he's all over the place.
Do you know any nursery rhymes?
I'm blanking on anything. I'm just thankful that you're going to...
You are like the vice president of the show.
Yeah, well, if you're, I stand
you're,
here...
You're either the Hillary Clinton or the Barack Obama of this
show. No.
So you need to be...
If
the phone stops working at 3 o'clock in the morning, you have to be able to pick up the slack.
Go.
I have to say that politically, I haven't been as involved as I have been in previous campaigns. So I'm looking forward to what Doug's about to say about his experiences, because unlike you, I haven't been a news junkie.
We get you back?
You got me back.
All right, good.
I got cut off somehow.
I said to Sherry, you got to pick it up. And she said, I got nothing. I go, this is like the campaign. If a phone stops working at 3 o'clock in the morning, who
exactly.
is it? So what I started to say, and I'm not, maybe you already answered the question to no one in particular, was do you think that what's happening on both the Democratic and Republican sides gives us and the rest of the world any insight into Americans, or is it just sort of a snapshot in time, and if it were a year from now with the same players, it'd be completely different?
I think it gives the world some insight into Americans. I mean, it shows on many levels. For one thing, it shows that people are ready to nominate either a woman or a black man for president, at least on the Democratic side, and that's a first, and I think that shows some progress in a number of areas. The fact that people are so engaged and interested, I think it also shows the world how disenchanted so many American voters are with President Bush and his policies, that people are so hungry for something different and something new. We'll see if they sustain that all the way to November, but they certainly feel that way now. But I think any election, it is a snapshot of where the people's thinking is at that time, and it would be different a year from now or 4 years from now, just as if these candidates had run 4 years ago or 8 years ago, things would have been different. But I think it is instructive as to where people's thinking is right now.
The reason that I ask is as I watch the polls, and it's funny because over the years that I've known you, I've asked you questions about polls, and although you're helpful, I've always had the sense that you've been I wouldn't say noncommittal, but I don't know that you placed that much emphasis on what the poll data says.
Well, I do. I mean, I studied polling in both high school and college, so I know how it works. But I always look at the methodology because, I mean, polls, one of the ways I get a sense of who's going to win in a particular place is by looking at the polls. But I got to look at more than one, and I always have to look at the methodology. How many people did they question? What were the actual questions? What's the margin of error? Because so much depends on how you phrase a question and how you reach the people and who are you calling and how many did you call. And I know I went to college in Rhode Island where we couldn't do a good Republican poll because there weren't enough Republicans to get an adequate sample size. So
gotcha.
We were told, don't even try. I thought that I don't play stock in polls. It's just that I've seen them be wrong, and I've seen bad polling. So if it's a good poll, I find, you know, it can be pretty accurate and can tell you a lot.
And in the current situation, certainly on the Democratic side, I mean, we've seen the polls kind of go back and forth. There was a period of time where it looked like, you know, either of the Democrats would be able to take McCain handily, you know, even within the margin of error. And then that seemed to be not the case. Then Hillary was up, then Barack was up. And that's why I ask about this kind of snapshot in time. Are the American do you sense that the American public is so fickle that, you know, if the election were held today as opposed to 6 months ago or 6 months from now, we would have a completely different result? And is that a good thing if that's true?
Well, polls certainly are snapshots. It's how people are thinking on that particular day, and it's not a predictor, and people can change their minds, as we've seen they do. And B, I think the electorate is very volatile, especially this year. And yeah, for a while there, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton both beat the pants off any Republican. But, you know, the Republicans are uniting behind McCain. The Democrats are still fighting. McCain isn't getting a lot of play right now because there's not any drama on that side. There's no suspense any longer. So Obama and Clinton are in the news more. But I think it's too early to say. I mean, I know people who just assume any Democrat will win. I know other people who say, hey, don't count on McCain. I'm in the latter camp because I never count. I mean, the Republicans have shown they can win in the most difficult circumstances, and the Democrats have not shown that they really know how to effectively manage a national election since Bill Clinton was president. So I think that it's a volatile electorate, and it's, you can take polls now, and it helps you, but no matter what, I think it's going to be close in the fall. It could be a two-point election again, a one-point election. Things could change. A lot will depend on who the Democratic nominee is, if the Republicans are able to negatively define that person before they get a chance to define themselves, how McCain is defined. I mean, I could see this being kind of like 96, where Dole was the Republican nominee, and it was clear he just wasn't going to win, and you knew he would lose by 5, 7, 9 points. That could happen with McCain. On the other hand, if they tear into Hillary or Obama, whichever gets the nomination, effectively in September, October, it could be very close, and McCain could win. So I don't think you can decide now based on polls being taken now, because there's so much that can happen in the next 6 months to help swing this thing one way or the other.
How important will the selection of the vice presidential nominee for either of the candidates be?
Not that important. People put more stock in that than is warranted, I think. It seems to me that running mates don't typically help you that much. They can hurt you. Although Dan Quayle didn't hurt the first George Bush. I never understood that. But certainly, you know, when McGovern took Eagleton and that blew up in his face, that hurt him. If you take somebody who turns out not to be popular or has something negative going on with him, that can really hurt you. But I think people, you know, the geographical balance and the racial and ethnic and gender balance, it plays into it, but I don't think it's as important as people think. I really don't. I think that, in one way, I think if Hillary Clinton's the nominee and has Barack Obama as her running mate, I think that could be a huge help to her, simply because it might turn out a lot of voters who otherwise won't vote, and that could really help put her over the top. I think if the inverse is the case, I don't think Hillary Clinton would help Barack Obama at all. And in fact, I think she'd hurt him because so many people don't like her so much they wouldn't vote for them.
Now, let's talk about that for a moment. Is it true that people don't like her and that you don't like her simply because she's a woman?
Well, I've certainly gotten plenty of emails and I wrote a
Robin's
blog
writing
entry.
Polls right now.
No, it was on Doug's blog.
A couple weeks back, there was a blog entry I put on SovereignNation.com called "Do you hate all women or just Hillary?" I forget, something like that. Because I get emails like that. It's so ridiculous. As you know, I only hate certain women. And people do hate Hillary. I don't think they hate her because she's a woman. I really don't. I mean, somebody must, but, you know, there are sexist people out there. But, you know, they don't hate Dianne Feinstein. They didn't hate Elizabeth Dole, I mean, in the same way, anyway. I think people don't like Hillary because of who her husband is. They don't like her because of things she did when she first became First Lady. They don't like her because of her personality. I don't think it's because she's a woman. But, yeah, there are a lot of people who just will not vote for her under any circumstance.
Now, you're obviously aware, and we talked a little bit at the beginning of the show today about the whole Geraldine Ferraro thing. She was actually forced to resign from an unpaid position in the campaign. How bad is that?
She was forced to resign from a position no one knew she had.
Exactly.
And what a stupid thing to say. I mean, I think it's ridiculous for her to say, you know, oh, if Barack Obama weren't black, he would never be this successful. I mean, is she kidding? I mean, if he weren't black, he would have clinched the nomination already, probably, if he had this personality and this sort of aura and charisma. I don't think it's because he's black that he's doing so well. I think he's, in some ways, he's doing this well in spite of being black. I just think it's a preposterous thing for her to have said.
But what she said before that, I'm sure you've read it. I've got the Daily Breeze in front of me. She said, "I think what America feels about a woman becoming president takes a very secondary place to Obama campaign. For one thing, you have the press, which has been uniquely hot on her. It's been a very sexist media. Some just don't like her. The others have gotten caught up in the Obama campaign." And then she said, "If Obama were a white man, et cetera, et cetera." My sense in listening to the pundits talk on the various cable news channels and reading stuff on Politico and RealPolitik and all of that is that there is a segment of the population that feels that any criticism of Hillary is criticism of her gender, apart from her politics or anything else in her past, and they cannot be persuaded otherwise.
That's exactly the case, and I think Ferraro is buying into the line that it's a sexist media. I don't think it's a sexist media. Half of the media, if not more, are women, highly successful, you know, high-achieving women. What, they're sexist? They hate women? I don't think so. I don't think that. But first of all, what is Geraldine Ferraro doing talking to the Torrance Daily Breeze? Shooting the breeze. I hear it's a pretty good paper, actually. But, you know, when was the last time the Daily Breeze made that kind of news, you know? But I think it's wrong.
You're talking to me on a podcast, okay? So,
well, now she should be talking to Schnauzer Logic. That's what she should be doing.
Maybe you
want to
get her as a guest.
Now I can.
This is the place to go. You know, she's going to be. I hear she's going to be doing an exclusive with the Watsonville Register Pajaroni next week. But I think that it's true that there are these people who just say, "Oh, you're sexist because you criticized her." I don't hear as many people saying, "Oh, you're racist because you criticized him." Although people pussyfoot around that because they're afraid of appearing racist. But I thought we were past the point where, you know, if you say something negative about a woman, or not even say something negative, if you cover something that's negative about a woman, people assume you're sexist. I mean, as I wrote in my blog, just about every person who represents me in government is a woman, and I vote for them proudly, and I don't think, if anything, I tend to trust women more. You never hear about them getting caught with prostitutes.
Because they're better at covering it up, is what you're saying. We're talking with Doug Sovereign. He is a reporter, a journalist for KCBS. He's got a blog at sovereignnation.blogspot.com and also at kcbs.com, where you've got song parodies that you've done about, I guess, each of the campaigns so far.
Right, we've got the Obama. We have an Obama quandary here. We did this first song about Super Tuesday, and then we did the McCain song, which was to the tune of Fame.
Yes, which was great.
McCain, he's going to live forever. Got a lot of complaints that it was ageist.
Yes, exactly.
A lot of complaints.
Do you like not like all old people or just?
Yes, that's right. And then we did the Huckabee song to the tune of Let It Be. It was Huckabee. And that one didn't generate any controversy for some reason, so I guess it wasn't funny enough. And then we did the Hillary song to the tune of Eleanor Rigby, which I thought was really good, and it was a challenge to do that one. It was a lot of words in that song. But that's when people thought I was sexist. And now I've written three Obama songs, and the boss says I can only do one because it would be equal time. He can't have three songs, and Hillary only had one song. So I'll save the others for later if he becomes the nominee. So on Friday this week, we are debuting our Obama song, which is about how the media loves him and is biased against Hillary. And should I tell you anything about it? Or
of course, of course.
It's to the tune of Loves Me Like a Rock by Paul Simon, and it's called Love Me, I'm Barack. So hopefully, some people in the newsroom feel that no one remembers that song. It was a big hit for Paul Simon, you know, in 1973. But I think people do, and it's an upbeat, catchy song, so it's going to be fun.
Now, you didn't go for the obvious, which was Lady Obama?
Lady Obama. I didn't even think of that one. That's good. You know, there are so many options with Obama. Lady Obama. That'd be good. Someone suggested Rosanna by Toto.
Oh, yeah, very nice.
A lot of people have suggested My Sharona.
Okay.
Barack Obama. But I don't really like that song.
That's a little harsh.
So I have this one, and then I have another one about the media loving him called The Times Is On My Side.
All right.
To the tune of Time Is On My Side by the Rolling Stones. And then I have Tracks of My Tears by Smokey Robinson, and that one is about how Obama has a thin resume and maybe a lightweight, and that one, it's the lack of his years. Is what it is. So I don't know when that's coming out.
What we're saying is Weird Al has nothing to worry about.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to hold you up too late because I know that you've had a long day and you got another long day tomorrow. What's the most surprising thing to you about this particular campaign season so far?
Wow, the most surprising. Well, I predicted that McCain would win the Republican nomination, so that wasn't a surprise. I think the most surprising thing to me is probably the strength of Barack Obama, and maybe it's my own prejudices, but I just thought that the country was too racist to nominate a black man for president, and that her machine was too powerful to overcome. And so even though I felt this groundswell for Obama, I just thought, no, Hillary Clinton's going to win the nomination. There's just too much for him to overcome. But he's overcome it, at least to this point. He's leading. And that does surprise me. I really didn't think... I just thought the rest of the country was too racist to vote for the guy, but I guess I was wrong. Pleasantly, I'm happy to say I was wrong.
If they wind up going into the convention in Denver and it sort of remains the way it is today, which is obviously neither one of them has enough delegates to actually capture the nomination, but he's ahead in the popular vote, he's ahead in the number of, you know, elected delegates or pledged delegates, and he, you know, combined with the superdelegates, he's still ahead. Do you think that she will continue to fight, or do you think at some point she'll just kind of back off?
If it's like this all the way to the convention, no, she'll fight. I've never seen a Clinton back off.
Yeah.
I don't think she'll back down. But if he gets to the point where the margin is widening, and I don't think it's going to happen, though. I think before the convention, these superdelegates will be forced. I mean, Nancy Pelosi will call in all the members of Congress who are uncommitted, all the Democrats, and say, look, this has to go one way or the other, and they'll try to resolve it before August, because they don't want to go into the convention still divided and having a fight when a week later the Republicans are all united.
Right.
I don't think they want to do that. I don't think anyone is going to clinch it, but I mean, it's almost impossible. It is impossible.
Yes.
Just about for anyone to clinch it when the primaries end in June, but I think they will try to the party leaders will try to sit down and get it worked out before the convention. I really do. But I don't think at this point, if she wins Pennsylvania, which at the moment it looks like she will, she'll stay in this thing. Obama's already talking about going on to Indiana and North Carolina and almost conceding Pennsylvania. So it looks like this is going to go on till Puerto Rico in June, and you know, there'll be a lot of people down in San Juan looking for every vote they can get.
If you
and
like
I'm lobbying for that assignment.
If you like Barack Obama.
Well, that's a good one.
The possibilities are endless.
Barack Obama.
Doug Sovereign, thank you so very much. If you allow us, we'll kind of check in with you during the season and talk a little bit more.
It would be an honor and a privilege.
Thanks. So when's next time you guys are playing?
The band is taking a... Well, we're not taking a hiatus from learning new songs, but we're taking a little break from gigging. Our next gig is June 20th at the Red Devil Lounge in San Francisco, but we'll probably have something in May.
Cool.
But the big news is we're playing at San Quentin in August.
Get wow. out of here!
We are.
Very
hope
cool.
I hope they let us get out of there once we get in there. Johnny Cash, Metallica, now it's going to be the Eyewitness Blues Band.
SovereignNation.blogspot.com and also over on KCBS. Doug Sovereign, thank you so very much, Doug.
Thank you.
See you guys soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I could talk to him for hours.
I know. He's great.
For hours, for hours, for hours. I love this stuff. And he's knowledgeable and thoughtful. It's a rare combination. A lot of people are knowledgeable, but they're dogmatic mm-hmm. about it. I mean, my politics are fairly laid out on the table. I dislike her personally. I've never met her. I actually have a letter that she wrote to me that she signed. She reminds me of a kind of person, I think a kind of woman, that I remember from college, in particular, who went to Wellesley.
Right.
Who, there's something, it's a visceral kind of reaction. I don't think it's a rational kind of reaction. It's a visceral kind of reaction. And if she is the nominee, I think I would be hard-pressed to vote for her. I might stay home. And I know that that doesn't necessarily in my own best interest. On the other hand, I don't know that I think Obama has what it takes to run this country. On the other hand, quite frankly, I think I do. That wasn't a joke. But okay, I'll take the laughter wherever I can get it.
Sorry, it was really completely genuine.
People talk about, well, what are the qualities that you need in a president? You know, what do you need for somebody who answers the phone at 3 o'clock in the morning? And it occurred to me that what you need for someone who, to be president, I think that one of the key qualities is the ability to be able to construct large, abstract models of problems in your mind and hold all of the variables in your mind simultaneously. That's what you need to be able to do. And clearly our current president doesn't have that ability.
He doesn't have the grasp on the entire picture. He is very literal.
And yeah. I think the ability to work in the abstract and hold many conflicting abstract ideas in your head simultaneously is the single most important thing, because then you have the ability to at least begin to get at the core of whatever these problems are and weigh things out, because it becomes this, you know, decisions are like mobiles, mm-hmm. you know, that you hang from the ceiling. There's many, many things hanging off of them and lots of things kind of balance together. And
if I move this, then that happens.
Exactly.
And if I don't move this, then this is going to happen. No, absolutely. And I also think that it's the strength of the cabinet. You know, he's got to,
yes.
whoever runs this country.
Cherry or walnut.
Oh, yeah. No, it's got to be mahogany.
And by the way, I think she has the ability to do that kind of abstract
yes.
thinking. So that's not my concern with her. I think Obama has that ability. I think that's what he has. He clearly has the ability to do these abstract models in his mind. I don't know whether John McCain has it. I think he's got more of it than our current president, but I'm not sure that he has it. Part of it is because of what he went through. I think it kind of took
clearly
some of it out of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's taken some of it out of him. But I think that's a key element. But in terms of actual experience, I mean, he's a Paul. Let's be honest about it. So it's not like I'm, you know, in love and voting. You know, I'm not campaigning for him. I'm disenchanted with most of them at this point. So it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out at the end. But like Doug, I would not rule out John McCain at this point. I think you underestimate him at your own peril, as they say. All right. Another tune.
Okay.
Jason Nathanson.
Yep.
Back on the other side.
Cool.
I like that. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, Cherry Stevens. We're both inviting you to please stick around.
I think you're a refreshing gay boy.
Schnauzer Logic. Changing your heart. for the car. Those teenage hopes who have tears in their eyes, too scared to run after one little while. Oh, 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 you're changing your heart. Oh, 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 you know who you are. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 9, or 10. Money can't buy you back the love that you had there.
Into the second hour of our 62nd episode of Schnauzer Logic, being recorded on Wednesday. It's the 12th of March, 2008. My name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host, buddy, and pal. I'm a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman pad attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning, saying son of Vista, and welcome back to Sherry Stevens.
Son of Vista.
I missed hearing this.
I know, it's great.
I love this tune. It's been too long. And it means, of course, that we're going to have a visit right now from our very good friend down in Los Angeles. You know him, you love him, you can't get enough of him. Here we go. Oh, yeah.
This is the song I like.
Oh, yeah? Okay, cool.
I bought a bourgeois house in the Hollywood Hills with a trunk load of $100,000 bills. Man came by to hook up my cable TV. We settled in for the night, my baby and me. We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels.
Yes. The bald Jewish guy. I don't even know if he has a VW van anymore. I think he's driving a Prius, isn't he?
I don't remember, but I know that the van went bye-bye somewhere.
Did it?
Jason?
We could. Yes, Jason?
I'm First Club VIP. How can I help you? Robin, is that you?
Is this kid Charlemagne? Can you believe it? $5,000 a Jew paying retail?
Pretty amazing, huh?
Son of Vista, my friend, how are you?
Son of Vista, I'm good. And yes, it's a Prius. And the van is still around.
Oh, it is. It's still.
Although on its kind of last leg.
Oh.
Yeah, she's not doing so good.
And Parvisa's not here in the studio, but I got to ask on his behalf, how's your grandma?
She's good. Oh, good. So round and kicking. Thanks for asking.
So I want to get into all matters of pop culture, but we have not really gotten into the whole Elliot Spitzer thing. And I know that you're down at the newsroom down in L.A. Is this something that you guys are following?
This is great. We haven't had a good sex scandal in a while. There's been a lot of murder and a lot of death, a lot of gang violence here in L.A. And so to get a sex scandal, it's good for the news cycle. It's fun for the whole family. I love it. I absolutely love it. And Spitzer, you know, he's been kind of on the national stage, although if you're not too big in politics, you probably didn't know who he was before this. And he's got this squeaky clean image, and it to see somebody like that fall, I mean...
Tell people who he is, because we have listeners outside the U.S., obviously. And
he's the governor of New York, former attorney general, and was big on prosecuting things like prostitution rings. And busted a bunch of them in the early 2000s. And, I mean, the guy is... He's always been seen as a family guy, nose to the grindstone, very tough prosecutor. He had big political aspirations, you know, just like Gavin Newsom, the mayor of San Francisco. A lot of people had big hopes for him.
Gavin Newsom had sex with a prostitute?
Well, no, he had an affair, you know, and he was...
And what's the difference?
Well, one you pay for, the other you pay for dearly.
wait. Oh, wait, I don't know where the... hold on a second. I don't have the sound effects, sorry.
Okay. But, you know, this happens a lot in politics, and it's not surprising. I'm not happy the guy, you know, has his life turned upside down. And sure, it's a horrible thing for his wife and for the kids and stuff. But, you know, how can you not think you're going to get caught doing something like this? There's a huge ego or hubris or something that you think you can get away with this. I don't get that part of it. You know, when there's so much at stake and there's so many people that you can hurt, I think that's the problem. I don't have a problem with what the guy did. If he wants to go to a prostitute, that's fine. I think prostitution should be legal. But, you know, to hurt so many people, that's just where you really suck.
And do you see a pattern with all of these none so holy types who, you know, Larry, the guy from, you know what I'm talking about,
Larry Flint?
No, Larry Craig.
Oh, Larry Craig, yes, the senator.
The senator. I mean, we hear
the bathroom stall senator.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a listing of senators and congressmen and other public officials who have winked their winkle, but you know, basically, it's almost always it isn't anyone that goes, yeah, I've been sleeping around, so what?
Sure.
You know, it's always like this is wrong and this is immoral. It's people who are full of hate and loathing. For other people who... Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's the most fascinating thing to me. Larry Craig was one of the guys who spoke out majorly during Clinton's impeachment trial about how wrong this was and all, you know, the scandal and the affairs and the sex. And then the guy goes and gets busted in a bathroom stall trying to have an extramarital affair, and he's apparently been doing this for years. Shut up if you're doing that kind of stuff. Don't speak out. You know, if you're going to do it, that's fine, but don't be the guy they can come back to for a quote and pick out of the New York Times 10 years later and say, oh, this is the guy who said Clinton was immoral for doing this. It's just going to come back to haunt you. If you're going to do it, lay low and shut up. That's my advice.
Now, let me ask you about $5,000 for 2 hours, because when you think about it, I mean, I don't know about you, but I've had sex. Sorry. And as good as it ever was, it was never worth $2,500 for an hour.
Did you see the girls on the website?
It doesn't really matter.
How hot are the girls that you've been with? Because they're hotter than the girls I've been with. So I mean,
I've actually been with some fairly hot girls over my life. It's surprising to both of us, but we have been together. I know. It's everybody's surprised.
And
I don't.
What did you pay? Like $30?
When 40? I said to both of us, no, but and by the way, like you, I don't care whether someone wants to pay for sex. I think as long as it's consensual.
Right.
And what's interesting is, when you know, the argument is frequently made, and I think rightly so, that women who are involved in prostitution are being taken advantage of. That they're obviously not getting the fruits of their labor, right? There's some middleman involved, and so they're not making a lot of money out of this. They're kind of it's a sexual slavery, right? Well, and so they're being exploited. But any woman that's, you know, pulling down $2,500 an hour, I'm pretty sure that she's not working for $8.50 an hour, and you know the service gets the other $5,004.
Sure. I just talked to a guy who was actually busted by Spitzer in one of these prostitution rings. His name's Jason Itzler. He goes by the title the King of All Pimps. And he ran a service very similar to this Emperor's Club VIP. Very high class profile, sorry, high profile or high class hookers, and they got a lot of money, the same amount. And the girls would usually get 50% of the take. So, you know, if it was $2,500 an hour, she'd get half of that. And he said a lot of these girls were usually from some kind of Harvard or Ivy League school background, rich, well-educated, well-put-together. I mean, these weren't streetwalkers. And so you're paying for that. If you're going to pay $5,000 for 2 hours, that's the kind of thing that you want. You want a girl like that who can kind of maybe be on your arm or hold a conversation.
Well, if I'm paying for someone from Harvard, I want her to, like, write my nephew's term paper. I mean, we're going to give...
She could do both, and then she could bang your nephew, you know?
I got to write that down because that's... I'm going to hold you to that. But, I mean, why... But he did not take these women out. It's not like he needed someone who could be on his arm as an escort. I could understand someone doing that. I could understand right. you doing that. I could understand someone doing that. I don't mean you personally, but...
Oh, I could see me doing that. Yeah, absolutely. I have that kind of money.
But in his case, what was this all about?
Well, Charlie Sheen had a great line. You're paying them to leave, basically. You're paying them so you don't have to see them in the morning. You don't want to spend a lot of time with them. You get to have your sex. You get to have your weekend of fun. And that's it. There's no strings attached. And for a lot of powerful guys like that, I imagine I'm not one, so I don't really know. But for guys like that, they can only get away for a weekend from their wives or for a night. And that's all they want. But maybe they do want somebody who can hold a little bit of a conversation after the sex. Possibly they can talk about world affairs. Who knows? I wish I could be in that power level to do it, but it's not me. So maybe someday I'll do it and I'll come back and talk to you on the show.
On some level, I'm sure he's paying for the fantasy. You know, that's his dream. It's his fantasy. You know, maybe that's why he justifies.
See, I think for that amount of money, it's about power and control.
That too, sure.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's definitely the pimp, the king of all pimps guy that I was talking to, said for that kind of money, pretty much kind of do whatever you want. And if they're not going to do it, you can pay them a little extra more and they will. And these are, again, it's about the fantasy, but these are high class educated women. So that's even more of a power trip because you get this kind of caliber of woman to submit to you. So that's part of it.
So is there a substitution here? Is this a situation where he could make this woman do things that he couldn't make his wife do, and so this is a way of substituting this woman for his wife?
That could possibly be it. I mean, who really knows what's going on in the mind of a guy like this? But I think the power angle is probably a big one. And it's not... I think the sex is definitely a part of it, but I don't think that's anywhere near the whole thing.
Not the biggest part?
No.
All right.
For him and for, you know... I heard he's kind of small.
So the last... Well, he would have to be. But again, all right. So, since we last spoke to you, the writer's strike was settled.
Yes.
Woohoo!
It's all over.
It's all over, but the 2 cents plane. So, how has that affected your world?
It's very exciting. First of all, the little followed news writer's strike was settled first, which is that's the part of the WGA that I'm a part of. And because of the big strike, that was settled. Except the only person who's still mad about that is Katie Couric, because she never got her debate to run. And apparently she's fuming about this. And she's really, really upset that she never got a presidential debate. So she's storming up and down the halls of CBS. So, you know, sorry to her.
Well, maybe she has something racist to say about Barack Obama. That'll get her in the news.
Probably. That's all you need. Or, you know, she could say something about women and piss off Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
Know, either way. So... the writer's strike is settled, and now the next thing they're looking at is possibly a strike by the actors. But the writer's strike, there's been good and bad. Not a lot, but some people are saying that the writers caved, that they finally just ended it to get the Oscars on the air. The Oscars were a big, big factor in all of this. That was the one flagship that nobody wanted to see go down, especially the producers. And so they put a lot of pressure on the writers to get a deal signed by Oscar time so there could be the great Oscar show that we had. I don't know how better it was because there were writers.
And that's surprising because I think that they might have actually done better this year with the slate of films that were nominated to not have had the full show.
Sure.
And then they could have blamed the writers. They would have had a lot more pressure because the movies were all downers.
Yeah, and basically there was not a lot of people saw the movies this year that were nominated, and they blamed that for the poor ratings, people just didn't care. They didn't tune in to see No Country for Old Men or There Will Be Blood. Nobody really cared about that. And the show that did go on was still extremely clip-heavy. There were a lot of montages, and they never did, of all the montages they never did the real big celebration to the films that were nominated, if you notice that. They never did, they took you through the five films and did montages of those. So, you know, it was hit or miss. A lot of people said it was okay. I like Jon Stewart.
I agree.
I think he did a better job than last time.
Sure.
And I thought he hit on most of his jokes. I was definitely amused by him and liked the show.
You know, we talked about this on, I think we talked about this actually on this show, because we were on the air the last time he did the Oscars, mm-hmm. right? We've been doing the show now. We're into our third year, I think, right?
And it feels like 10, yeah.
In Schnauzer years. And and what I had said at that point was, I think if you assume that anyone's going to walk in off of the street and do the job that Johnny Carson did after, you know, 10 or 20 years, or Bob Hope, or even Billy Crystal, who's not my cup of tea, you're kidding yourself. These guys were not home runs out of the gate,
to mix
a metaphor. It took them time to figure out the rhythm and what worked and what didn't work and how to adjust things. And that if you gave Jon Stewart another chance, hell, if you gave Ellen DeGeneres another chance, if you gave Steve Martin another chance, I think even if you gave Letterman another chance, if you gave people another chance, they would figure it out. These are professional entertainers. They gauge things from the audience. They go, wow, that worked, that didn't work. And clearly when Stewart went out this time, he was 1,000 times more comfortable. You could see that he felt good in his own skin.
Yeah.
And if the crowd didn't sense any nervousness, they want him to succeed. They were running with him almost the whole way. As I agree with you, I think he had one or two kind of clinkers, and for the most part, it was just, you know, solid hit after hit after hit.
And, you know, good for them for bringing him back. We live in a society where they cancel a show after one airing if it doesn't get ratings.
Unbelievable.
So, I mean, this is the kind of world we live in. So, you're right. It takes time to build somebody up, especially to host something like this. I couldn't even imagine the pressure of doing the Oscars.
No.
You have everybody who's anybody and powerful in show business sitting there right in front of you. And Jack Nicholson. And, I mean, it's tough. So, you know, good for him. Good for them for bringing him back. And, you know, I think we have a host for a little while, at least.
I was saying to Sherry that we were talking about, you know, the qualifications for being president. And I said, I think I have the qualifications. And then she laughed quite loudly at me when I said that. I don't think I have the ability to host the Oscars.
Oh.
Just so that you know, my ego does not...
not that big.
It actually knows bounds.
It's not that big. Well,
it's not
good.
That big. I could be president. I could not host the Oscars.
How about the Emmys? You could do the Emmys.
Maybe the BAFTAs. I think I could probably do the BAFTAs. I'd be a novelty act. I'd come out there with plates and poodles, and it would just be... it'd be a good time.
I'd like to see you at the BET Awards.
I bet you would. So what have you been doing for entertainment?
Nothing. Britney Spears is nowhere to be found for
all right.
a couple of weeks, so I've nothing to do. And TV hasn't been on, so I have nothing to do. I think for one of the first times ever this year, I saw all the films that were nominated, because as a member of the Writers Guild, they get sent to me, so I didn't have to actually do anything to go see them. And the one that I did not get, that I went and saw in the theaters, and I think that actually should have won, was Atonement. And I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't see that, no.
After the Oscars were over, I felt, you know, since I'd seen all of them, I had to see this one. And I thought it was the best overall well-rounded film of all the ones that were offered.
Mm-hmm.
They were all good films. They all had their ups and downs, and I think they were a little more, some of them appealed to different people. There was no one film that I thought that was, everybody thought, okay, this is good, except for Atonement was the most well-rounded of all of them. So I think that should have won. I saw
two of the nominees for Best Film. I saw Juno, mm-hmm. and I saw No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
And I thought Juno was kind of this year's Little Miss Sunshine. It,
sure.
it had a very forced indie feel to it. If you're looking for a great indie film to see, I highly recommend Rocket Science. It was a film that was nominated for a number of the Independent Spirit Awards, which I watched the day before the Oscars. It was nominated for Best Screenplay, Best First Directing, I think Best Actress. I don't think it won any of them, but on the basis of the nominations, I wound up going out and renting it, and I highly, highly recommend it. It's a terrific little film, and feels to me what an indie film should feel. It's not like it's constantly looking over its shoulder, asking the audience, are you going to give us an Oscar? Are you going to give us an Oscar? These are unknowns who are really invested in this wonderful, quirky little story. It's called Rocket Science. I highly recommend it. But I saw Juno, which was kind of okay, and I saw No Country for Old Men, and I was baffled at the end of it. And I thought to myself, I love the Coen brothers, by the way, although they're two misanthropic fucks. I mean, the fact that they had nothing good to say when they were, you know, they won all these awards and went up on stage and couldn't fucking rally themselves for a kind word. I mean, you know, it's sort of beneath them. It's unbecoming in my perspective. But nevertheless, I thought to myself, I understand the artistry of their filmmaking. I understand the power of the acting. I thought, you know, Javier Bardem was fine in the role. I mean, I understand, you know, the choices. I thought, but at the end of the film, I thought to myself, I would be very hard pressed in any way to describe this as entertainment.
Yeah.
It was not in the slightest bit entertaining to me. I felt like I endured it and made it through, and now it was something that I had accomplished. I had accomplished No Country for Old Men.
It's like childbirth.
Yes.
I'm glad you say that, because I agree. And, you know, people I talk to, especially down here in L.A., they look at me like I'm an asshole when I say that I didn't really like it.
But that's not why.
I saw, especially from the Coen brothers, a movie like Fargo. Again, it comes back to the well-rounded. Fargo was a great story. It had drama, and it had comedy. It had weird, quirky characters. There was a lot of things to like about that. There was nothing really to like about No Country for Old Men. I didn't like the characters. It was dark, and it wasn't well-rounded and funny. It was just this weird story, this weird, depressing, strange story, and I didn't really like any of it. It didn't move me in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And the same for There Will Be Blood. The story itself didn't move me. But the greatest thing about that, and I know you didn't see it, but Daniel Day-Lewis is amazing. I mean, and No Country for Old Men didn't have that. Daniel Day-Lewis was just absolutely incredible. And whatever you thought about the film, you could not deny that that was just an amazing performance. No Country for Old Men had good performances, but it didn't have something that really, really stuck out. And the Coen brothers are known for being more well-rounded filmmakers than that. So I was disappointed.
I understand. Any of the summer blockbusters that you're looking forward to at this point? I mean, they're just actually the spring blockbusters are coming up first. Anything there?
No, not really.
Speed Racer?
I haven't been
Harold and Kumar go to Guantanamo Bay?
I can't wait to see Harold and Kumar go to Guantanamo Bay.
I bet that's true. I'm looking. That's actually one of my list.
The White Castle movie was pretty funny.
It was damn funny.
Yeah.
It was damn funny. And the fact that they got Neil Patrick Harris to come back and do it again, because he's actually got, I mean, his career had kind of been nowhere, if you think about it.
Sure.
For quite some time,
and they got him to do this funny cameo. He had not come out of the closet at that point. And he's in the back with a couple of strippers going, lap dance! and the
humping
fact...
the seat.
Right, and he now has How I Met My Mother, How I Met Your Mother, right? And he's doing very well. He's come out, nobody really cares, and and the fact that he would come back and do another part of the film, it speaks volumes for how cool he is.
Speaking, by the way, of How I Met Your Mother, which is a segue I don't think I've ever uttered, Britney Spears taped her role on it today. She'll be on the March 24th episode.
So all right.
If you're looking for train wrecks, that's something you might want to watch. I don't watch the show. Like we said before, I'm not really a fan of the three camera sitcom, and especially the stuff on CBS right now. But that might be interesting to watch. March 24th, Britney Spears on How I Met Your Mother.
All right. And
very exciting. And the other thing I'm sad about this week, if you're a fan of The Wire on HBO. I don't know if you've watched that or not. Excellent, excellent show. The finale was this week, so that's over. No more of that. Go check it out if you have Netflix ordered, you know, go check out the past five seasons. Excellent, excellent show. I just got into it at the end, so I'm going to go back and watch all of them.
Cool.
There's nothing really else on HBO right now that's really moving me.
And you're doing live reports for KNX?
I am, yeah. You can check out, like I was talking about, that interview with the pimp guy, Jason Itzler. That'll be on tomorrow morning, although this won't be on the website probably by then. But it might be in the archives at KNX, so you can check it out.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and tomorrow afternoon, I'm going to interview Adam Carolla, because he's going to be on the new season of Dancing with the Stars that premieres on Monday.
Well, you need to say to him, listen, my friend Robin wants me to ask you a question. What happened, dude? I mean, talk about a guy whose career has gone into the crapper.
I mean, the guy's still pretty successful.
No, 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 no. He's been left behind. Adam Carolla is the Jan Karam of his generation.
The guy's still doing pretty well, though.
Yeah, listen. This guy had the whole thing with the morning show, right? With he and Jimmy, he was a national star because of the whole Dr. Drew thing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, on Loveline and stuff like that. Dr. Drew into the fucking stratosphere. Jimmy into the fucking stratosphere. Adam Carolla tries to take over for Howard Stern. That doesn't work. I mean, it crashes and burns in most markets. I don't know that you can blame him, but once again, it kind of crashes and burns. And he's now eating Tucker Carlson's remains. That didn't come out right, but you know what I mean. I mean, he's doing Dancing with the Stars.
Sure,
notable for such characters as Marie Osmond and Paul McCartney's one-footed
absolute
wife.
I would agree.
What? Hello? Hello? What? Mommy? What? Hello?
There's some degree of sellout going on there, because his character on The Man Show probably would have kicked in the face of anybody.
Exactly.
So you need to ask
him that. You need to say, dude, my friend Rob wants to know, dude, what happened?
I'll say that, just like that. Dude, what happened?
And then
career?
Get him to call into the show here, because I'm a huge fan of his.
What?
I'm a huge fan.
With a setup like that, I want to come on.
All right. Randomshow.blogspot.com, Jason Edmondson.
Sure, whatever.
All right,
go check that out. That's a lot of fun right now. Go relive my trip across the country
right.
3 years ago.
We got to take a break. I'll take it back on the side. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, take care,
my friend.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Jason.
All right, stick around.
I think you're a refreshing gay boy.
Schnauzer Logic.
Searching the land for a hero of a man. You say I need more than my fair share of attention, but I think you know that just isn't so. Underneath, I felt the fire of a burning question tearing me apart right from the very start. And now I see that it don't take a trick of the light to excite me. So strong, so long. Hold on to what you've been given.
Serving the universe from the top of the Empire State Building.
Actually, it's a second bedroom with some bath mats taped to the wall.
And broadcasting loud to all time zones around the world in stereo.
It's a medium bitrate podcast. Oh, and it's mono.
This is
Schnauzer Logic!
Welcome back. We're 35 minutes into the second hour of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein. Robin at SchnauzerLogic.com. www.schnauzerlogic.com. Straight white blues, vegetarian, lesbian, Korean boy, captain, body, becoming transsexual, and patent attorney, consumer, and master degree in city planning. Welcome back.
Hello.
Little KT Tunstall there?
Yep.
But not the stuff that she's known for here. She's got a big album with lots of good music. And
she does. And
yeah.
She's got a big band now, whereas before she was just playing all by herself.
True.
Yep.
True enough. Where do you hear new music these days?
I hear it all over the place, but I do...
Really?
You know, yeah. Because, you know, in a work environment, we play music in our lab, so we've got a young kid, and he'll play music, or...
You have, like, a stereo system in the lab, or, like, speakers with your people have iPods and speakers?
Well, here's how I see a lot of new music, and okay. I see it, and I say I see it, because... When you're on iChat, a lot of times people will, you can see what they're listening to. And so if I find something catchy in a title, I'll go to iTunes and take a look at it. So I found a few things that way.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah. And then the radio, I do get a lot from the radio. I listen to KFOG and they do the new releases Thursdays. And so that's where I hear a lot of new music.
See, I don't listen to the radio. Well,
that's kinda ironic.
It is. Well, so I have lots of radios all over my apartment, and that's what I said was not completely accurate. I do actually listen to the radio, but I listen to talk radio. Mm-hmm. I listen to news radio. I listen to comedy. When I listen to music, I tend to listen to my iPod or I listen to classic or jazz on satellite radio, and so I don't know where to find like a new releases channel.
Thursday mornings on KFOG.
On KFOG would be the place to do that.
Yeah, or you just have to go and see what was played that morning. You don't even have to listen
to it. I see. And of course, they have new releases on the iTunes Music Store, so that's a way of kind of clicking through stuff too. But there's a lot of urban, you know, stuff that it's just not my... It's not that I dislike it. It's that it doesn't really catch me. There's no hook there for my ears. And I never thought I would say that about music because I love music. Mm-hmm. But I realize there's just a lot of stuff that just doesn't... It doesn't have any emotional connection with me. So I just kind of pass over it. And so I wonder where people hear about this stuff. Occasionally on Letterman, he actually has my taste in music. He had KT Tunstall and...
Right. Ingrid Michaelson.
Yeah.
And something Buckley.
Yeah. And playing white tees and all of that kind of stuff. Right. Yeah. He's actually more interesting people on... There's a website that I go to regularly called TV Squad. I go there every day, actually. And it's basically a place where people blog about TV shows. They're U.S., mostly U.S. TV shows. Occasionally do some U.K. stuff, but mostly U.S., to be honest with you. And there was a reason that I was starting to say this. What was I thinking about here? Help me. What was
new
I
talking
about? Oh, yes. And thank you. And they were blogging about the fact that this week, Janet Jackson, who is supposed to be the upcoming musical guest on Saturday Night Live for this next coming weekend show, is not going to be on. She's sick. She went into Cedars-Sinai Hospital. She's got some kind of bad case of the flu. There's bad stuff going around. It's probably legitimate because I've heard her interviewed other places. And instead, Mariah Carey is going to fill in at the last minute. I thought they were going to ask Paul Simon to do it because he's done it forever. And the question on the blog was, does anybody actually watch Saturday Night Live for the music anymore? Is it really relevant? And I thought, not me. How about you?
No, I don't think it's relevant. And I do see things on Letterman or you know, but not some, you know, I don't stay up that late. I'm not TiVoing anymore. I need to get back into TiVoing.
Yeah.
But
Letterman has got great musical guests. I think Jimmy Kimmel has great musical guests here in the United States. Conan has good musical stuff. I'm not a big fan of the people that play on what's-his-name show, Jay Leno.
So I think you'll see a correlation of what you see on Letterman in the new releases on KFOG.
Okay, well that's worth knowing.
I think you'll see a lot of that.
And I find when Craig Ferguson has music on, it's usually too hip for the room. I can't. It's just too LA hip, you know, back room after. I don't know. I can't get into it.
Well, you like him. I like him.
You like him. You like
it's
him.
That Scottish accent.
And speaking of new music, sometimes everything old is new again.
just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a faithful.
You want to tell us the story?
Hey, you know, I only heard a blurb.
Well, then
I
that
heard
makes
the
you
keywords.
Happy.
Marianne and Mary Jane.
Well, tell us a story.
Well, I can't read this, but I'll tell you what I heard.
All right, that's fine.
The actress that played Marianne Anne on Gilligan's Island,
whose name was Dawn Wells.
Dawn Wells was pulled over, I think, on a routine traffic citation. Was that it?
She was actually swerving.
Oh, yes. That's even better.
Yes. She was swerving around.
She was swerving around, and when the officer approached her car, he could smell a little bit of weed.
Herb.
So, yeah. And so, upon further inspection of the vehicle, he found like four halfway or mostly smoked joints. Was that? Am I correct here?
Yeah. You're right on the money.
And so she was arrested.
She actually failed the field sobriety test.
Oh, okay. Well, you keep going.
All right. Marianne is in trouble thanks to Mary Jane. This is from E! Online. Gilligan's Island star Dawn Wells has been sentenced to 6 months unsupervised probation. Well, we know what she's going to be doing. let's see. The former actress, now 69 years old. Hey,
woo,
good for
another
her.
Reason why we like her.
Girl power, baby. Girl power. Don't tell me I don't like women. she pleaded guilty on February 29th to one count of reckless driving as part of a plea bargain, and additional misdemeanor counts of driving under the influence, possession of drug paraphernalia, and possession of a controlled substance were dropped. In addition, she was sentenced to 5 days
controlled
in jail.
Controlled substance? Marijuana is a controlled substance?
Fuck yes.
Okay.
It's a Schedule 2 or something like that. Class something. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. In this country it is. And it'd be nice if we could get a president who would kind of think about
moving that off.
Yeah, think about moving it off the dime, as it were. Wells' troubles began as she made her way home from a surprise birthday party thrown by her friends on October 18th. Now, you have a surprise birthday coming up, too, so you be careful there.
It's not surprise. It's okay. Not a surprise.
Well, it will be when you get there.
Yeah, good.
She was stopped by a cop who allegedly witnessed her car swerving and speeding up and slowing down after pulling over. Teton County Sheriff's Department Deputy Joseph Gutierrez claimed he caught the distinct odor of pot wafting from her car. When he questioned her about the aroma, Wells reportedly replied that she had picked up 3 hitchhikers. But dropped them off after they started smoking marijuana. Good dodge.
But kept the joints.
A search of her car revealed 4 half-smoked joints plus 2 cases used to store marijuana, according to the police report. She failed the field sobriety test, was cuffed and taken to the sheriff's office, where she later posted $4,000 bond and was released. Trial on the matter was scheduled to begin Thursday, but was canceled following her guilty plea. So there you go. Ta-da.
Wow. Good for her.
Good for her. Hope I'm still smoking dope when I'm 69 years old. But just not driving.
Yeah.
Just don't be driving.
Not good.
I mean, I think you could put that kind of swerving around or just being 69 behind the wheel.
You know, 69 is not that old. And I say that because I recently went on a ski trip to Salt Lake and then had a chance to visit some friends and family. And so I have a friend that's 79. It's a friend of my mom's.
All right.
She plays tennis 4 days a week. And I mean, this woman can play. She was the number one ranked women's tennis player in Salt Lake until she was like 71.
Yeah, but she's a woman. So what does that really mean?
Well, you see these women play. Plays tennis 4 days a week.
I
and
was
the
being
other
ironic oh, okay. there. People can't tell.
All right, sorry. Not enough people in the room.
You can't tell.
I can tell. I'm sorry.
Clearly, you can't tell. So there is hostility out there. Let us not... I'm feeling it now. Can you feel it? I can feel it.
Good. Anyway, she plays tennis 4 days a week. On the days she doesn't play tennis, she runs 2 miles.
Wow.
And I'm like, how do you do this? And she says, I'm afraid to stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she's in great shape. Nothing hurts. No arthritis. No, you know, her joints don't hurt when she plays tennis. So that's my goal. So when I retire, I need to start working out. It's like a marathon. I need to work out for my retirement so I can be that active.
There's no better time to actually have the energy and strength and endurance to be able to do that. What she said, it reminded me of something I was going to use, actually. I've been filling in for Jason. Jason has been doing Thursday mornings on KSCO, our old station, with Rosemary Chalmers, program director and host of Good Morning Monterey Bay. And when he's not able to do it, which I guess he's not able tomorrow morning, I've been filling in. So it's usually 6:45 to 7. It's a 15-minute segment. It's basically a little bit of Schnauzer Logic, pop culture. Rosemary and I joke around a little bit, and I've been filling in. And last Saturday was George Carlin's 14th special on HBO, comedy special, and he was interviewed on Salon.com, the Salon magazine. And he had this great quote that I wanted to use there. I don't have it in front of me, so I'll try to remember it, but it speaks exactly to your point, which is he was talking about how he would continue going, because I think he's in his 70s now. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's no spring chicken any longer, and he's still, you know, getting riled up and still cares passionately about, you know, life and interests and politics and what have you. And he said, you know, do you worry that you're going to ever get too old for this? And he said, you know, there's a story that they told about Pablo Casals, who was the famous cellist. Do you know the mm-hmm. do you know the mm-hmm. story? You know who he
I
is.
I don't know the story. I know who he is.
But he played, I guess, well into his 70s or 80s, and somebody was interviewing once, and they said, you know, Maestro, you're 80 years old. You're recognized as perhaps the most preeminent cellist of all time, and yet you practice 2, 3, 4 hours every day. Why are you still practicing? And he said, I'm beginning to notice some improvement.
Cute.
And I think that's really yes. it. And you know, you're turning 50. I just turned 50. I just got an invitation from Ann Bennett, a friend of ours, who's turning 50 as yeah. well, to a little 50th birthday shindig that she's going to be throwing. And part of what I think happened over the period of time between when we did the last Schnauzer Logic, you know, back in August, really the last scheduled Schnauzer Logic, and this one is, I kind of went through some up and downs of that process. Turning 50 didn't really affect me very much on my birthday itself, I think, because I was so wrapped up in what I had to do for my birthday. But after it was over and I edited the little video that's over on Schnauzer Logic and over on YouTube, and I began to kind of look at my life, and then there was a series of people that I noticed that were either connected to me directly or indirectly, who were in their late 50s or just turned 60, and they were dead. They were dying. People in their late 50s and early 60s were dying, and it occurred to me that I could possibly have only 10 years left. And I thought to myself, well, if I died now, people would go, oh my God, that's a tragedy. You know, for somebody to die at 50 years old, that's a tragedy. But if somebody dies when they're 61 or 62, we still think, we say, that's too young. That's too young. They were healthy and vibrant. But in our, at least in my mind, I don't think to myself, well, that's just insanely too young. That's not like somebody dying in their teens. I mean, you're 60, it's like, hey, listen, you know, people start dying. You get to one end of that tail, right, of the normal distribution, mm-hmm. and you die. And I thought to myself, holy fuck, I might only have 10 years left. That's terrifying and very depressing. And then I think, well, do I then parcel my money off for like 10 years and like spend it all
yeah.
down? And what if I make it to 61? Now I'm really fucked, you know? Or do I keep working through pretending that that's not the situation? And then if I die at 60, it's like, well, she worked like every day, like, you know, it was, you know, every day was the same, and like there was nothing special about life. She just kind of did what she did until she stopped doing it. And I thought, and I got all bollocks up about this. And then I was watching Saturday Night Live, the very first show that they had after the writer's strike, and Don Pardo, who has been an announcer apparently at NBC since like 1932.
Oh my gosh.
He turned 90. And they had a birthday cake for him. Don Pardo, who is still the announcer on Saturday Night Live, turned 90 years old, and they had a birthday cake for him, and they all sang happy birthday to him. And I thought, okay, so I have somewhere between 10 and 40 years left.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, now I don't know what the fuck to do with that. And so I think that means you just kind of, you realize you may only have 10, but, you know, you got to plan like you have 10.
I think you live your life the way you want to live it.
I'm trying.
Yep.
So there you go. Well, happy birthday early. You're not going to be able to come to New York. You got plans? You're going to be doing something? You don't want to talk about it?
I don't mind talking about it. I don't know how to make plans right now because I have a lot of trips to China coming up.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yep, it's that time
it's
of year.
It's almost like Parviz was in yeah. the room.
It's that time of year. And, you know, I'm torn. If I throw myself a birthday party, that means everybody knows how old I am.
We just told everybody how old you are.
Don't tell anybody else.
All right.
And, you know, I'm kind of low-key when it comes to parties. You know, I kind of like the 30-day of birthday celebrations that I normally
do that.
Every
yeah.
year.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, I give my friends a 30-day window to celebrate my birthday with me. And so I find myself going out to dinner 2 or 3 times a week for 4 weeks. I like that. I like that one-on-one time.
50 pounds in 50 years.
There you go. So we'll see. Stay tuned. I'll make a decision at some point.
All right.
And I don't know about New York. We might go in October with. I have another.
All right.
I have some other friends that are also turning 50.
Because I thought you might be coming to my nephew's bar mitzvah.
I know.
He's getting bar mitzvah at the Central Synagogue in New York.
Is that on like the 8th or 9th? Let's see. What is that on the?
I don't know. I have. It's in May. Sometimes I'm going to go. I'll probably spend a week. Try to catch up with some friends because I've not been back. And just hung out.
Well, you were back when...
Go back and just hang out, I haven't done that in probably 15 years. It's always because of some tragedy or something like that. So to be able to go back and like maybe go and visit my friends at Sony.
Yeah.
I think some of them are probably still there. I'll go up to the radio station I started at in Warwick, New York, 250 watts, WTBQ. It'd be amazing to go back up there again. I have not... I wanted to do that... When I closed up the house at my mom, after my mom died, and I just wasn't able to get away. It was just so much stuff was going on. So, and to go to the MoMA and the Guggenheim.
Oh, yes.
And
I love New York. We are going to go. I just don't know exactly.
And then there were people that I worked with when I first got out of law school who have not seen me since my transition. And I'd love to go fuck with their heads.
Why not?
Actually, Friggy said he'd come with me.
Oh, good.
So that's a possibility as well.
Cool.
All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take our very last break. We'll try Johnny one more time. And if not, you and I will wrap up this bad baby.
Okay.
And call it a show.
Sounds good.
All right. Let's see. I got a little Amy Winehouse.
Okay.
But doing some old stuff.
Okay.
So that'll be kind of fun. So we'll play a little Amy Winehouse. We'll come back and we'll finish it up. All right? How's that sound?
Sounds good.
Good. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, Sherry Stevens, voted by you.
That's the trouble around here. Talk, talk, talk. Oh, sometimes I think I must go mad.
We'll be back with more Schnauzer Logic.
To my lover's heart.
This has been your orientation. Is there anything you do not understand? Is there anything you understand only partially? If you have not been fully oriented, you must file a complaint with personnel. File a faulty complaint, and they dock you.
Welcome back. We're just getting ready to wrap up today's show. We were not able to get Johnny on the phone, so we'll try next week.
Next week's good.
But I wanted to thank you for sitting in.
Thank you. This is great.
This was a good show.
It's an excellent show.
This just took 8 months of preparation.
Yeah. And I came completely unprepared, as usual.
No, you didn't. You brought yourself with you, so that was a win. I always over prepare, which is fine. So we were talking a little bit. I want to talk with Jason about this. We didn't have a chance. We can talk about it next week. Leno, maybe, you know, Leno is probably going to be leaving NBC.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. So here's the deal. So Jay Leno, who's currently the host of The Tonight Show, he has agreed to leave at the end of 2008, I think. And Conan is supposed to start in 2009 because they were afraid that if they didn't give Conan the earlier slot, that Conan would leave when his contract is up. So Leno was like, Jay Leno basically said, yeah, all right, I'll leave, whatever, you know, no problem. That was horrible.
You're going to play with that, I can tell.
That's when I want Parviz to be here, because then I can blame him for these bad impressions. So anyhow, he said yes, he was going to be the good guy and he'd be happy to retire. But the reality is he's not interested in retiring. He's certainly young. He's on top. His show continues to beat Letterman on a weekly basis, on a nightly basis. And so, and he's a workaholic. You know, he still does road gigs, I don't know, 300 days a year or something like that. So that's probably John DeCoven. Let's see here. Schnauzer Logic.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, we're into the end of the show here.
I know.
So,
yeah, the phone, I didn't even know. Yeah, yeah. It was in my pocket and the battery died.
Yeah, that's what Elliot Spitzer said. But seriously, folks, hey, how's the diet going? I'm really worried about you.
Why?
Well, are you losing weight again?
A little bit.
You're not posting anything on your blog. That's a bad sign.
No. I posted last week.
It was go check the date, my friend. It was easily 2 weeks ago.
Oh, okay. I'll have to check it again.
All right. We're all here rooting for you, though.
I've just been busy. No, I'm fine. I appreciate it.
All right. We're rooting for you.
I'm sorry about that. Fuck, man. Okay.
Exactly. All right. You want to plug anything?
No. Are we on the thing?
Yeah. You gonna give us a plug?
Oh, no, I didn't. What do I want to plug? Just go to my website, laughalotproductions.com. You can check out video from my anti-Valentine's Day show.
How was that? Big success?
Very, very fun. I got women talking about blowjobs and the whole thing.
Oh,
well, you know, it's a good Valentine's Day when you got women talking about blowjobs.
Hey, have you ever paid $2,500 an hour for a hooker?
Have I? No. I mean,
what's
can
the most
that guy? That guy, Spencer. You know the guy, Jewish.
Yeah, that's God, why we're shocked.
What a disgrace! What a disgrace to the Jewish tribe.
What I said. Yeah.
Huh?
Come on, give us your punchline.
No, that's the punchline. It's a disgrace. He should have been able to get a better deal than that.
Thank you very much. That was a joke. That was a joke I opened the show with, which you'll hear.
My other Spitzer joke is that the local whorehouses are having a Spitzer special for $20. You get a hand job and watch your life go down the drain.
All right, www.laughalotproductions.com. We're going to leave on a high note, Johnny. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye bye.
Bye.
All right. That sounds like a good place to stop.
That's good.
Oh, man. Anyhow, now they're saying that Leno may go to Fox because they don't have any late night programming.
Wow.
They were saying that he might go over to ABC, but that's where Kimmel is, and right before then they've got Nightline, and that still does very well, even though Koppel's not hosting it any longer. So be very interesting to see, but I'm interested in that. Also, I'll make a prediction. This weekend, the animated version of Horton Hears a Who is going to open, and my prediction is it will suck and get terrible reviews. And the reason is because I've seen the promos running for it, and the promos show the voice actors behind microphones doing their parts. And if an animation can't live on the basis, it's fucking Dr. Seuss.
Right.
It should be able to hold on to its own. All right. Anyhow, thank you so very much for sitting in.
You're welcome.
We'll be back next week.
Pleasure.
As far as I know, we'll start doing the show again on a weekly basis. Unless there's baseball, we'll be here every week. Until then, show up, pay attention, tell the truth, and don't be attached to the outcome. I love you, Mom. I love you, Dad. I miss you both. Tell your friends that we're back on the air. Get more listeners. The more, the merrier. Have yourself a great week, and take care. We'll be back next week.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
This is over now, and you just got to deal with it.
I want you to know it's over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over!
It's over, Harvey. I'm sorry. I need to get on with my life.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Elvis has left the building.
I'm in my vagina.